Pat Boone here for the folks at Swiss America. Rock solid foundations are vital in life, in business, and in finance, because in the end, only what we've built on a firm foundation will withstand the storms of life. Today, the economic storms are raging and the foundations of everything are being tested. The world economy has never looked shakier. And gold, the world's oldest and most trusted form of money, is also grabbing headlines. Now is the time to put your future on a rock-solid foundation. Swiss America will help you create an indestructible asset today. Discover the timeless truth about gold and silver by calling Swiss America or visiting online at SwissAmerica.com.
Call 800-614-7199, 800-614-7199, 800-614-7199. 800-614-7199.
Welcome to one of the most listened to music news podcasts in the world, SGNP, with your host, Darren Sutherland. Join us as we talk with industry leaders, artists, and entertainers about their faith, family, and careers. This is information you will not find anywhere else on radio, web, or in a magazine, but only firsthand on SGNP.
Did you ever step on stage anywhere inebriated?
Absolutely. It was one of the most embarrassing nights of my life.
And welcome to SGNP. Darren Sutherland here with my co-host, Arthur Rice. Arthur, how you doing today, my friend?
Hey, doing great. Doing great.
Man, I tell you what, we have a show today. This, the 26th day of October. And we've got a show coming out today that
pretty special.
It is pretty special, and it talks about a documentary being put on by Fathom Events this Tuesday night in theaters nationwide. It's on a Tuesday, October 30th. It's a documentary on Russ Taff and his new documentary, I Still Believe. And he talks directly and straightforward in the movie, the documentary, whatever you want to call it, about his bout with alcoholism. And it's something else.
Yeah, it really is.
Today, we're going to have the opportunity let's just be up front. We've already interviewed Russ before we're doing this opening of the show, Arthur. And we'll close it out in just a second, and you can tell people, you know, what you thought at the end. But what are people, you think, going to be shocked to hear this from a gospel music singer, Christian music singer, contemporary Christian music singer, about his bout with alcoholism and how he's just so raw and direct with it?
I think there'll be some people that will be shocked. But I believe there'll be more people that it will help, that will realize that, you know, it may not be alcoholism or drugs or something. It may be something else, but just addiction of some sort. And it can be anything. I mean, it can be anything. You know, anything short of being addicted to the Lord is an addiction. And
yeah,
we all need to, that we all fight every day. So, and I think it will, I think it's going to be eye-opening. I think it will help encourage a lot of folks.
You're going to hear him talk about his relationship with Bill Gaither in this interview. You're going to hear him talk about his wife and almost losing his marriage. You're going to hear him talk about his childhood and his father, who was the Pentecostal preacher and a hardliner that you couldn't live up to the gospel. Then Arthur and I will be right back with an interview with the one and only Russ Taff on SGNP.
Hey, cousins, this is your pal, Country Radio Hall of Fame DJ Moby, and you're listening to my buddy Darren Sutherland on SGNP. Yeah, baby.
Is someone you love playing a dangerous game of Russian roulette? Hey, this is Darren, and I'm going to tell you some personal information. I've got dear friends who are addicted to methamphetamines. I've got family members who overdosed from heroin and passed away. I've got relatives who suffer alcohol addiction and are alcoholics. You've heard from Russ Taft talk about his problem with alcoholism. Addiction is a scary thing. in anywhere in the country, you think about it, addiction's a big problem. Right now, the Addiction Hotline wants to help you and your family. And with the new federal Family Medical Leave Act, you can get the help you deserve. Call the Addiction Hotline today, 1-800-980-1761, 1-800-980-1761, and talk to them about the help you, your friends, or your family may need. Heck, over 43,000 people die every year from drug overdose. 88,000 people die every year from alcohol abuse. 1-800-980-1761. 1-800-980-1761. If Russ Taft can stand on stage and then later admit, hey, I've got a problem with alcoholism, you can too. Get the help you deserve, and I promise you, your heart will be so much happier for it, not to mention your family and friends.
And welcome back to SGNP. Arthur Rice on the line with us. Arthur, we got a great guest today, and he's got a great documentary coming out. And I will tell you, Arthur, and you know this before we got on here, I was a little bit nervous about today, not about the guests we're talking about, because you know me, I can talk to anybody in the world, but it's about the subject we're talking about, and it's Russ Taft in his new documentary coming on with I Still Believe. Russ, are you there, my friend?
I'm here, Darren. I'm here, Arthur.
Great, great, great to talk to you today, Russ, and appreciate you taking time out of your busy day up there. And you're out of Bellbuckle, Tennessee, correct?
Yeah, we moved out there about 5 years ago.
Man, I tell you.
Real small town.
I tell you what, my son visited Middle Tennessee State about 5 years ago, and we got off of the interstate right there to go head towards Shelbyville because I wanted to show him the rolling hills. And I knew where Bellbuckle was, and I think there's another town right in there called Wartrace, am I correct, or something
Absolutely.
Like that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was...
About 4 miles.
Yeah. I'll tell you a funny story. Back in my early days out of college, my first job was an insurance fraud investigator, and they put me on a surveillance case in Wartrace, Tennessee. Now, my voice, I can mix in with the crowd, as you can tell. But when you're sitting in an empty pickup truck on the side of the road in Wartrace, Tennessee, around Bellbuckle and the railroads and all that, everybody in town's going to stop and ask you who you are because they're so friendly.
Yeah. And you That's a great way to put it. That's absolutely true.
Yeah. Russ, documentary, and I'm going to let you tell the story because I don't want to give it away to folks, but at the same time, you've told this story countless amounts of time. I Still Believe, and it talks about your life growing up. It talks about your great marriage with your wife, all the awards you've won, all the accolades in gospel music. But it also talks about your battle with alcoholism. If I look back at the liners that I took off of the movie that really struck out to me, that really stuck out to me, to start off, Amy Grant, when she described Russ Taft, she said, raw and gritty. Michael W. Smith said, I don't know if I can compete with his voice. Michael Tate said, he brings every song he sings alive. Bill Gaither said, when you join the Imperials, that they hired a star soloist. Bart Millard said he was scared to death to talk to you because you were so freakishly good and he loved you growing up. And then our friend Mark Lowry said this, and I quote, and I mean no disrespect about this, he's an alcoholic. Tell us about the movie.
Well, I've always... With both my parents gone, and I didn't feel the need to protect the story anymore, I wanted to tell the story. 5 years ago, it just felt like being led by the Holy Spirit that this story needs to be told to show the grace of God, to show miracles that He still does. But I grew up in a little bitty town in California, and my dad was a pastor of a small little Pentecostal church. And you both are going to know what I'm talking about. It's like that old line God that you're hanging by a thread over hell, and any moment he can let you go. So growing up with that, and things between my mom and my dad. I was 7 years old when dad had been preaching for a couple of years, and then he disappeared. I was seven, and I came home, and I heard him singing in the back bedroom that didn't sound like my dad. And I walked back there, and I found him, and I didn't know what was wrong with him. I'd never seen drunk before. And I went and got Mom, and when she saw, she just burst into tears, which started then a lifelong road for my dad of sobering up for 5, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, and then just collapse. And he was battling depression, and he just had some demons in his past, and the only way he could deal with it is to drink. And it just kind of hit our whole family. Four out of five of my brothers have this gene in them also. And so I grew up in that little church, and a constant diet of Mom and Dad both on a daily basis. You're not worth the bullet you shoot you with, and you're not worth the salt that goes on your bread, and you'll never amount to anything. Mm-hmm. It was constant. And after a while, Arthur, you start believing it.
Yeah.
And
you
start thinking that it's true. And then you come on out into your adult life with just so many questions, and you're so insecure. But I tell you, to talk about it was hard. When I was 9 years old, one of the worst beatings I ever got in my life was I told my little friend that Mom and Dad had an argument, but they were pastor, and they're supposed to be perfect.
Right.
And Mom beat the crap out of me till I was in the floor, you know, her kicking me, saying, "You don't talk to anybody what goes on in this family." And so, but I had watched my dad, and I knew how to hide. But I had never drank because of my dad. I'd never drank it. But we were in New York on the during July. Torres' brother was a musician there. And, you know, there are just some Christians who are social drinkers, and I don't judge anybody. You know, it's between them and God. But we were on the fifth floor in July in this apartment building, and it was hot as it could be. And I opened up the refrigerator, and there was a Heineken. And so I thought, well, I'll have this. Other people have it. And immediately, Darren, I started feeling something. And then I had another one. And then I had all three of them. And all those voices dissipated.
Yeah.
The voices of shame, the voices of guilt, the voices of God does not like me. All of those got quiet. And really, the next day, I began to praise and worship God, thanking him, I have a way to deal with this. I can just make it quiet. I can just make it quiet. And that started. You know, you have to have it the next day and the next day, and pretty soon your body is craving it, and you're addicted, and you can't stop. And the only way you can deal with life is to drink earlier and earlier in the day to stop the shaking. I mean, it was a horrible trap, just a horrible trap. But at first, I thought it was, man, you know, all those voices went away. I don't care if God loves me or not, I feel fine. But it didn't last. 4 hours, you have to do it again.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Do it again, and do it again. And then pretty soon, you've strung some years together of having to do this every day. And I hit. You know, I was quiet about it. And, you know, I would dodge my wife when she would start talking about it. And I would lie to her and say, oh, I just had one or two, and it's fine. When the truth is, I'd had a lot more than that. And it was like I was two different people. There was this guy inside me that loved Jesus with all his heart.
Yeah.
And I'd walked with him his whole heart. I mean, his whole life he had walked with him and loved him. Even though I didn't know he liked me very much, but at the time I loved him, mm-hmm. and I became two people. I would switch into that role of the gospel singer, and, you know, I'm singing to thousands of people, and everybody thinks I'm wonderful, and I'm serving God. Look, God, look at what I'm doing. And as soon as I would walk off that stage, I would take that guy off, and I'd put on this addict that would go back to his hotel ashamed. And it got to the point I couldn't even look myself in the mirror to shave. I couldn't look at my eyes.
Wow.
I hated myself. I hated what I was doing. And then God started bringing people into my life, mm-hmm. that they saw what was going on because they'd been around drunk before.
Yeah.
And one of them that I loved very much began to talk to me about it. And say, Russ, I think you're drinking way too much. And of course, no. I'm just having some, and I can quit anytime I want to. It's no big deal. And but still, that daily routine. But there was an intervention that happened that I thought we were going to be at our marriage counseling session. Didn't know if the marriage was going to last or not. And I walked into the therapist's office, and there were 17 people sitting in those chairs, the people that were the closest to me.
Wow.
And I would have to sit there, and each one of them took a turn and said that they love me, but I'm killing myself. They love me, but you're losing everything you've got to this disease. And Gaither was there, Bill Gaither. He came down, he heard about me, and he wanted to be a part of that intervention. And bless his heart, I mean, he cried through the whole thing and said, Russ, you're loved. You just don't have any idea how much you're loved.
Awesome. Yeah.
And, but there's a story in Matthew when Jesus healed the person by the pool of Bethesda, you know, the lame guy. He asked him a question that always struck me as kind of odd. But Jesus asked him, he said, would you be made whole? And I'm sure the guy had to think about what he's saying. You know, of course I would be made whole. But what Jesus was saying, if I heal your legs, you're going to have to get a job. You can't sit here and beg anymore. If I heal your legs, you're going to become a father. And, you know, take your son to, you know, soccer. You're going to have to take on a role of responsibility. If I'm going to heal you. Now, are you ready? And I believe that's what God was saying to me. He said, would you be made whole? He said, these are things that you have to do. But the great thing about it, he said, I'll give you power to do it. And so I went into a treatment facility, and, of course, Bill and different friends were calling and just making sure I was okay and if they could bring me anything. But those people risked everything, our friendship, to tell me the truth. And I've had to do that for another friend, and it's so hard to look somebody in the eye and be completely honest that you're going to kill yourself, you're going to lose everything, you're going to lose your family. Would you be made whole? Are you willing to go to any lengths to get better? And then God started bringing people to my life that helped me get to the next level. He got me involved with a program that we talk about this every day, and we find help and support with each other. I go to a church that preaches grace and that God's crazy about me. And, you know, I've learned how to become a dad. I've learned how to be a father. And because when you're drinking, your whole world is about you and the next drink. How are you going to get it? Is anybody going to see you? But I began to be a dad. And I turned into the husband that I wanted to be. And thank God Tori didn't leave. She's a tough woman.
Yeah, beautiful woman.
But yeah, she's beautiful, and that woman's tough.
Yeah.
In fact, when she gets riled up, I get a little scared. but, you know, we both began to work together, and she didn't hold it over my head. You know, she didn't say every time there was a problem, well, you drank and you blessed all that. She didn't. she would be aggravated at times, but she would never, ever throw that in my face. And she said, if we're going to walk together, we have to forgive each other. And we both have to work as hard as we can to make this marriage work. But I wanted that miracle.
Yes, sir.
But it wasn't, you know, fast a couple of days and it goes away. I had to change my life. First thing I had to do is stop putting that in my body and begin to talk about that trauma from my childhood and what Dad and Mom did to me and my brother that should have never happened to a kid.
Right.
And especially them being preachers and singers. And you know, you love them both, but you hate them both. And it took me a long time to get to a point that I can love them and I can forgive them and I can forgive myself.
Yeah.
And they were raising me the only way they were raised. But it took a lot of hours of sitting and talking and getting it all out and you know, getting rid of it. And especially all of that self-doubt, all of that, I'm not good enough. And you start believing if I was the only person on this planet, Jesus would have died for me. And your whole concept about him begins to change. And you start seeing a God of love, a God of kindness, and that he died to give me power over the things that are destroying me. But it's been a long process. You know, it just didn't happen overnight. But every day I will do something. Every day I will do something to give God the glory for my life and to ask him every day to keep me sober and thank him every night. To remind myself every day where I was. And without him, I would not have made it. I wouldn't have.
Wow.
And so every day, it is another day of celebration. It's another gift from God. And I get to enjoy it free and happy and forgiven. But, you know, I think in all of that, I was angry at myself because I became my dad.
Let me ask you this, Russ. You said this about your dad, that your dad preached a hard gospel that he couldn't live up to, that nobody could live up to. Do you think your dad did not understand the true word of grace, even though he was a hard shell KJV 1611, you know, probably wet foot Pentecostal pastor? Do you think he never grasped the concept of grace?
No. And to him, it was the only Jesus he served and believed was God, was that Pentecostal God. Because I tried to talk, he died in 1997, and I tried to talk to him three different times about grace, but he was terrified to die, and he would make comments to me like, when I see Jesus, I hope my good outweighs my bad. And, you know, I'm afraid I'll be weighed in the balance and found wanting. And the God he served, he had his fingers crossed if he'd make it into heaven or not. And I tried to talk to him about grace. I really did.
Yeah.
But in his mind, and it was so ingrained, it was like talking the Spanish to somebody that doesn't understand it.
Right.
And so he left this place terrified. But I like to, in my brain, I see him as soon as he crossed over, being embraced by a love he never knew existed, and basking in it, and just letting the love of Christ infiltrate him.
Yeah.
You know, you travel the country, Russ, and you've been to major places to sing in the largest auditoriums in the country. With the Gaither Vocal Band, you've sung all over the place. You've sung in small churches. You've sung in big churches. Being an alcoholic, can you identify with other alcoholics before they even mention it to you when they come to your show or come up and talk to you? Is there a sense, a feel, or something of that nature? I know that's kind of a crazy question, but a lot of times when people go through things, it's almost like a sixth sense. That they can recognize that with other folks.
And Darren, you can look them right in the eye and you see it.
Yeah.
You just see it and you see yourself.
And immediately there is this great sympathy and empathy to put my arm around them and say, there's a way out. There's a way out. Jesus can take your life like he did mine and turn it completely around. But you can see it in their eyes because there's shame. There's just shame when they come up to you. And sometimes they won't look you in the face. They look you at your feet and start talking about their problem. But you know it's a miracle that they opened their mouth and even said it out loud. But when you do that, you set yourself up to let Christ in. When you say, I am an alcoholic, I can't manage my own life, I have screwed everything up, and now I need somebody to help me get it right. And I need a God that loves me and that would teach me how to do all these things.
Wow. We know in the country music circles it's acceptable for a country artist or a rock artist or blues artist or whatever type of secular music artist to sing a song and be an alcoholic and then get up and say, well, I've done some bad, now I want to sing a gospel song or another type of Christian song, and it's accepted. Do you believe this day and time that Christians are too hard on each other for their sins, such as alcoholism and things like that? And do you worry that they're not going to accept you because you've came out and said, look, I sang to you when I was an alcoholic. Now I'm clean.
Yeah.
Do you ever worry about that? I mean, because, you know, we live in a, you talked about a legalistic world that I grew up in. Arthur understands it, and he grew up around it. We all know, we're not going to mention them by names, but we all know this goes on in the gospel music world today. You know, from time to time, and you both of y'all could mention names. I'm not asking you to, but what would you say out there, Russ, to the artist, along with the preachers and the people that are fighting this right now, that are hearing your story, and saying, you know what, if Russ can sit down in front of Bill Gaither and all his other friends, and he can get his life straight, why can't I? What would you say to those folks? Because they're out there. We know they're out there.
The first thing I would say is God's not mad at you. You know, God, he does not hate you. He's, you know, that's not the God that we serve. And I would share my story. You know, I was just as far down as you were, and I didn't think there was hope. But I found hope, and it took years to get sick, and it's taken me some years to get well. But I would say to that person, tell someone, hear yourself tell it to your best friend or your pastor. But when you say it out loud and you recognize you have a problem, then you're setting yourself up to get help. But until you say it to somebody, you'll hide, and shame will keep you completely covered. It's like they told me when I first started getting sober. They said, we're not bad people trying to get good, that we're sick people trying to get well, because there's a reason somebody's drinking.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, sure, there's those that you know, are just addicts and they just do it, but there's so many of us. There's all of these voices from our childhoods, you know, all of these voices of telling us that God's not love us, and you're afraid to approach him.
Uh-huh.
But Arthur,
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, to be able to let all of that go, just let it go, and know that when you say it out loud to somebody you trust, they will embrace you. Somebody you love and trust, I just have a strong feeling they're not going to kick you to the curb like they're always doing.
Yeah.
But if you find somebody that you trust and share that with them, I know you will be embraced by love. But there's hard people out there, you know, guys. But the reason I like getting older is I just really don't care what they think anymore.
Hovey told me that one time, Russ.
Yeah. Yeah, he told me. It's like you reach a point, it's like, great, if you like me, that's great. But I've been around long enough, if you don't, that's fine. I'll walk away and find someplace else. But I used to worry what people thought about me to the point of a sickness. I just couldn't let anybody in because if they saw who I was, they would judge me and kick me out.
because that's what the church does.
Yeah.
But I tell you, for me, there was a group of gospel singers that got around me, and they loved me, and they didn't gossip to everybody, but they prayed for me. Yeah. And kept checking on me till I was back on my feet again. And Gloria Gaither says, and Bill both, she said, I've never seen the body of Christ truly do that for someone wounded. Mm. That they turn in and surround them and not turn away from them and start gossiping. But it was just, for me, such a powerful moment that they loved me enough to hold me and not condemn me and kill me, because in your mind you're kind of expecting that if they find out, you know, things aren't right, that they'll just kick me to the curb. But if your people are that way, you're probably a good thing, get out of there. But God, is his main purpose is to get us well. I mean, that's why he sent Jesus,
right?
To give us power to get well, but we can't do it by ourselves.
I'm going to ask you a direct question, and if you want me to edit it out, I'll be happy to if you don't want to answer it. But
okay.
Just curious, did you ever step on stage anywhere inebriated?
Absolutely. It's one of the most embarrassing nights of my life. My mother had died, and I'd relapsed for a week. And it was the second day after her death, and I was still at that time so angry at her. And yet I loved her because she taught me to sing. And when she died, there was this overwhelming pain inside of me. And so after 9 years being sober, I began to drink that day. And we had a big concert, video shoot, everything, with a lot of gospel artists on that stage. And I thought I was okay. I thought, I've done this. I thought I was okay. And if I can just get through a couple of days, you know, then I can get back to mending the fences between me and Mom. But I miscalculated, and I walked on stage drunk. Mm. And, I mean, even saying it out loud today, it just hurts. I know Jesus has forgiven me and everything, but just in front of the whole music industry, wow, they saw me collapse. And but the thing about it, they treated me with love and not anger or throw me out because I have a problem. But I mean, when I think about it, I drive by that church, there is still, all these years later, there's still that kind of pang of, oh Jesus, I gave you a black eye, I'm sorry. But he's already forgot about it. And when I say that, he doesn't remember what I'm talking about. So
that's
I can let it go. I can let it go.
Arthur, you got anything? I know we're running short on time here, and we need to get him to wrap up and talk about his documentary and all that good stuff.
Russ, you said exactly right. You know, if you find somebody you trust, and that's the hardest thing a lot of times if you're in the ministry, is to find somebody that you can trust. Because
absolutely,
you're right.
Absolutely.
There's going to be some that are going to jump. You know, they're going to. That's all they're going to do. They're looking for something anyways. But the thing about it, when you go through this, you find out that there are people that you didn't realize that love you and care about you. And they want you to be well. And that is the great thing about grace, and the great thing that God puts these people in our lives. And man, I tell you, you've always been one of my heroes, and you still are, brother. I appreciate you.
But I wanted to say, if when you talk to somebody, or you feel like I need to say this out loud to address it now, find somebody that's been through a real hard time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, find somebody that their world was shattered and they got it back together because of Jesus.
Yep.
Find that person, because that person will have sympathy and empathy for you.
Yeah.
It's like Karen Peck's song says, everybody's going through something. So if everybody's going through something, you might as well go through something with him. Russ,
that's right.
The documentary comes out October 30th. I still believe nationwide in movie theaters. It's a one-day showing by Fathom Events. Folks need to go see it, don't they?
Yes, they do. Bring somebody that might need to hear that message of shame and guilt
and or maybe even addiction, but how shame holds us captive too. Bring somebody. Let's support this, because if we bring in enough people to these theaters, then Fathom Events, well, I think we'll do more Christian projects if the church supports these things, that we could get a lot of stories out there about His grace.
Have you got any negative feedback from anybody on this? Anybody says, I can't believe you did this, Russ?
I got one, you know, that I can't believe you sang to me drunk. But, you know, the time he was talking about, I was sober. So I didn't go too far.
you know who's applauding you right now, bigger than life in heaven, and he's calling everybody in heaven down to look at you and saying, look at my boy right now. He's telling you what grace is all about and what a Christian minister entertainer is. You know who's sitting up in heaven doing that for you today?
Who's that?
The late, great J.D. Sumner.
Yes, sir.
J.D.
Yes, sir.
J.D., without a doubt, was as real as a person could ever be. I guarantee you, in your conversations with him, Russ, with your conversations with him, Arthur, he was always real. He might have been smoking a cigarette, but he was real as can be, okay?
And he's on airs for anybody.
And he's applauding you for stepping up this day and time and thanking you for doing this, my friend. And I could sit here and talk to you for 2 hours. I know you've got other things going on and other things to do, but it's been a blessing that you would share from your heart, and I'm sure people's got 1,000 questions about this. And I tell you what, go watch the movie, write Russ a letter. You never know, he may answer it. But, hey, man, it's a great story, Russ, and it's a blessing that we can tell it here on Southern Gospel News Podcast.
Yes.
Thank you guys so much for being honest about this and doing it for real.
Hey.
Thank you.
You know what, Russ? Me and Arthur always say, we're making so much money doing this that we might as well be real. You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to use that. I like that.
Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you soon. Arthur, all I'm going to say is, whew. I mean,
that's as real as it gets right there, buddy.
You know what? I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this to every gospel singer out there. A couple of weeks back, we had the opportunity to interview the Jordan Family Band. And the Jordan Family Band, Josh says, get out of the box, okay? Taranda Greenbean talked last month to us about anxiety and depression, and she got out of the box. Russ Taff, with that interview right there, Arthur, more than anything else, got out of the box and told...
He got out of the box and crushed it.
And told the truth and even admitted, Arthur, to getting on stage inebriated.
Yeah.
And singing gospel music.
Yeah.
And something else. And I'm not criticizing the guy at all. It's a blessing to hear his story. Because the bottom line is, I mean, he's healed. God has touched him. He's living a clean life. He's admitting he's still an alcoholic because he has the disease. And he admitted that there's probably a lot of other friends of yours and mine out there that's potentially fighting this hidden disease. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we all have to come to a point to where, you know, we realize that God's enough and that He's big enough to fight our battles and He's big enough to fix everything. And when we come to that point, then we can be healed. And we can move forward.
What stuck out to you the most, Arthur, about what Russ just told us?
You know, he talks about stuff that's really kind of taboo to talk about a lot of times in our industry and in our genre, and especially in church work and any kind of ministry. It's almost taboo to talk about that stuff and to talk. About having a problem, because we're, you know, especially us that are in front of people, you know, we're the ones supposed to have it together.
Yeah.
You know, we're the ones that's supposed to be perfect. And then when you find out, hey, we're not, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road right there, buddy.
I mean, he just sat and told us, and I keep going over and over it again, and I kind of probably need to just let the folks, they heard it. He keeps going over and says, I was drinking while I was singing gospel music. I was fighting alcoholism. My friends knew it. What I think made me endure myself more to a man like Bill Gaither is when he talked about, he thought he was going to marriage counseling, and he was actually going to intervention. And there, yeah, he got in the room, and 17 friends were there, and one was Bill Gaither. Now, Bill Gaither, folks, let's just face it, he doesn't have to go anywhere. He goes where he wants. He's been blessed in this life monetarily. He's been blessed in this life with fame. He's been blessed in this life spiritually. But here Mr. Gaither is taking time out of his day to care enough to drive down, fly down, whatever, and sit in a room with Russ Taff and cry, as Russ is saying, and tell Russ he loves him and he's sticking with him. Now, we all see Bill on stage. You know Bill. We've all got the utmost respect for him. But did that not endure you to him a little bit more, Arthur, when you heard that story today?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, and of course, you know, if you know anything about Bill, Bill always has a heart for people. And that's one of his greatest traits, is he loves people, and especially loves our artists, and he tries his best to help them and encourage them. But you're right. You're right. That's a great trait to have.
I wished I could do that. I really wish I could do that more. Arthur, we're just going to leave it here. You know, we prayed about this a while back, and let me say this as we close out the show. And I don't know if I said this in our opening or when, but today more than ever, usually when we come to do these interviews, I cut up, and I'm looking forward to it because I know we're going to be talking about people's favorite basketball team. What do they do with their kids in their pastime? What do they do here? Where do they go to church? What kind of instruments did they play when they were children? Did they like their home ec teacher? And we have fun questions like that. But today I was a little bit nervous, was I not?
Yeah, you were, but it got real, and that's what we want. We want it to be real.
Folks, I called Arthur before we show, and I said, man, we're talking about something that I know has affected my family, and it's probably affected yours, and alcoholism. And I'm going to say, Arthur, would you say a prayer for us before we start? And he said, yeah. And I know you chuckled in your mind thinking, Darren, you're crazy today. But you know what the great part about this, Arthur, is? We sent letters out to every artist in gospel music. And we first did the show with Taranda about depression. Now we're doing the show today with Russ about alcoholism. Who knows who we'll get on next? God knows. We don't know right now.
Yep.
But,
yep.
You know what? Our hope and prayer, and I know this is your hope and prayer, and my hope and prayer is that someone's going to hear this today, and they're going to realize if a man that stood in front of the church and stood in front of the world and proclaimed Jesus can do it, certainly they can do it. Wouldn't you agree?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Man.
Absolutely. It's going to be good.
Russ Taff's movie. It's real simple. I Still Believe. Tuesday night, October 30th. Select screenings around the country. Go to fathomevents.com. Fathomevents.com. You enter in your zip code. It'll tell you what theater it's being shown at. I think I'm going to get a crowd to go see it, Arthur. I know you're going to watch the documentary, and we'll talk about it later. But I Still Believe, Russ and Tori Taff, great, great story. And, man, Arthur, one question before we get out of here, and I'll leave
yes,
it
sir.
At this. What's wrong with living right anyway?
Not a thing.
Not a thing. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you later.
Ever wonder how the credit card companies make their money? Well, think about this. If you owe $25,000 on five different credit cards and you make your minimum payments every month, here's what it's going to cost you. Are you sitting down? You'll shell out over $13,000 in additional interest, and it's going to take over 13 years to pay off your original $25,000 balance. That's how they make money. Now it's your turn to fight back by calling the Debt Solutions Network. We'll work on your behalf to reduce your debt. We specialize in credit cards, retail store cards, and medical bills. We promise we can and will reduce your debt. Call right now for a free 15-minute debt analysis. 877-490-1207. 877-490-1207. 877-490-1207.
SGNP is excited you chose to listen today. If you'd kindly leave a remark and rating in the podcast remarks section, we surely would appreciate it. Please share with a friend or family member. Look for us on Facebook, Twitter, and our new website, SouthernGospelNewsPodcast.com. To advertise your products, services, concert event, or new project on SGNP and reach a 100% guaranteed number of people in your area, call Tim Newton at 770-874-3200 or email him today, tnewton@bgadgroup.com. Let us geo-target our ads for you, something radio nor magazine can do.
Hey, this is Darren Sutherland. Before I close, I want to thank our affiliates out there, WLJA in North Georgia, KWFC in Springdale, Arkansas, the new one, The Andrew Burnett Show, heard all across the country, and online, TheLightAtlanta.com, playing Southern gospel music online. We're adding affiliates every day. We're partnering with Ken and the folks over there at Gospel Music TV real soon, so we look forward to that partnership. If your gospel music entity would love to partner with SGMP, get a hold of us. It's real simple. Folks, here's the deal. We've reached out to literally every form of media in gospel music. If we've missed you, I'm sorry. But we've had great partnerships with folks like Paul Heil and others. If you haven't heard someone on the air, it's not because we hadn't reached out. We hope everyone is successful, no matter if they're a radio station, a magazine, a website, a group, whomever it is. God bless you, and let's make gospel music better than it was today, tomorrow. Easy enough?